World of Space Design and Build podcast, episode 5, featuring Richard Tinto, with your host Simon Joss.
And we're live. Good afternoon, Mr. Tinto.
Afternoon, Mr. Joss.
You okay?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to see you, my friend.
And you, sir. We got there eventually. Apologies for missing it last week, but clients need to come first, as we both know. But welcome to another episode of Space Design and Build with me, your host, Simon Joss, and a very good friend of mine for over 20 years, I think it is. In fact, just under 20 years, Mr. Richard Tinto, based in Bonnie, Scotland, in my hometown of Aberdeen. And you're well today, sir?
I am, thank you very much. A wee bit chilly, 8 degrees here, which will pale into insignificance compared to your temperatures over there, I'm sure,
Simon. I miss that temperature.
What's that?
I miss that temperature.
You do, I'm sure you do, once a year. On Christmas, perhaps.
Yeah. Yes, possibly. There's always a time, but it's called air conditioning if we ever get too hot.
Air conditioning and polystyrene.
Yes, absolutely. For the purpose of our viewers and listeners, give us a bit of an introduction into who you are and who you represent and what it is you think they do.
So my name is Rich. As Simon says, we've been mates for probably close on 20 years, business associates too, and Tinto, my business specializes in architecture, interior design and project management, multi-sector, but with specialities in retail and leisure and in office design. Long journey, started doing what I was doing quite young and quite naive, but have grown into my shoes and are now operating across the UK and internationally with a few of our larger customers. Currently we are in a bit of a growth phase. We've got a team of 17 based here in Aberdeen, but we're actually spread remotely across London, Glasgow, and as far north as the Orkney Islands, for anyone who knows the UK. And the last year has proven how attracting the best people and not forcing them to a certain location is actually a thing that's been hugely advantageous to our business.
Very good. And it's obviously been a challenging year, but probably one that you've relished and helped you evolve even further in business.
Absolutely. You know, you and I have spoken, and many people do, about the acceleration of some of our thinking. And what the last year has proven is that the format in which we're catching up at the moment is a very valuable tool for large parts of what we do. It's proven and redefined the office and how we work as a piece of. I've got varying views and wide and ranging views on that. I know you know, Simon, but we'll maybe share later on around my approach to blended work and what and how we can achieve that. But I think the most important part of the last year for ourselves is it's reminded us that we're all human and how much we actually do need each other. So for all the advances in technology and all the progress that we've made with regards to being able to do so many things that we didn't know we could do this time last year, or just before this time last year, as we emerge from the pandemic, I think that we are now more aware of the need to get together from time to time as humans. And in a work environment, there is certain pieces of magic that can only happen when you're in the same room with your colleagues or your clients. And that drives my view on where the future lies for work offices and workspaces in general, I guess.
Yeah, I think for the various parties that I've spoken with across the globe, and you will probably concur, the office is not dead. You have to have that human interaction. However, it has advanced and sped up, expedited and accelerated remote working, remote project management and utilization of software, which was going to happen in by 2030, 2032 anyway. Whether that's project management, whether that's e-commerce, shopping, it's not going to be ever 100%, not within our generation and probably not the next generation. There'll be more reliability on it, but it will never completely overrule the human relations that we have to have. We work on emotion and we live by emotion. So I would wholeheartedly agree with you on that. And we all love to network. We all love to talk. We all love to spend time with friends, to socialize, both in business and personal. And I think when the time is right, it will balance itself out. And I believe the UK are now coming out into a much more casual, becoming a bit more social, coming out of that lockdown. So hopefully throughout 2021, an element of normality in society, as well as businesses being able to reopen and offices being able to reopen, will commence and will become back to a reasonable percentage. We'll come back to the elements of the office and the blended and flexible working. I'm interested to hear your thoughts about that, but I'm more interested right now to hear about what's happening with Richard Tinto. You and I have spoken both online. We follow each other. I certainly follow your vlogs. I watch them. I listen to you. You're an inspiration to for me to do the elements of what I do, amongst other coaches as well. And we both do a lot of reading and we both do a lot of writing. Tell me why you started a journal. What was the inspiration behind it?
What was the inspiration? Good question. So, you know, in life, certain things happen that sort of shift your direction. And for a lot of people, that can be, you know, major life events, you know, and a lot of the reading that you will do in businesses is, you know, this one time I had a car crash, or this one time my friend died, or this one time my life changed irrevocably. It shifted my perspective and it made me look more at who I am. I guess for me, it was just a looming 40th birthday. And I vlogged the other week about my 42nd, but as I approached my 40th, I began to realize that having started what I was doing quite young and quite naive, how lucky and how grateful I actually was to be in the industry that I found myself in, and how I had grown into that, both in a business sense and also in a personal sense. And I suppose what I'd come to understand as well, that I am not Richard Tinto, the work guy, and Richard Tinto, the home guy. I am this blended person because of the passion that I have for what I do. That was a bit of a challenge for me, because a lot of my contemporaries and a lot of people that you meet try and almost resist the temptation to be coming together of everything that you actually are, and they put work here and friends there and family here, and they shall never meet. So for me, it was that 40th looming, and a bit of growth in the business, which meant that, being really honest with you, I couldn't chase people around the office and tap them on the shoulder and ask what they were doing. That I had to find different ways of managing myself. I'd become a father in 2017, the end of 2017. I was adapting to that. The business was growing in a global sense. We were following Halliburton around the globe and continued to do so. So I found myself out with my comfort zone. So I started looking at different ways how I might begin a narrative with either external coaches or with myself. And I've mentioned to you, Simon, previously, I joined something called Strategic Coach, which is quarterly based workshops in London, run by a guy called Dan Sullivan, who's based in Toronto. And it really shifted my thinking around actually the benefit to business coaching, but more in a personal sense as well. And one of the first things that I started to do was actually to journal. And the idea around the journaling was to have a conversation with myself, or to have a narrative with myself that ordered my thoughts to take to the outside world. So the reason for starting was trying to verify almost my own credibility or my own maturity or emotional intelligence, if you like, but actually to sort things out in a manner where, as I began to deal with people who, being honest, I would have deemed two leagues above me, and feeling intimidated by them, I wanted to protect my credibility. But what I found out really quickly within that was that not only was I protecting my credibility because my thinking was joined up, but what came out in the act of writing, and the key thing about journaling is that it slows your thinking down. The physical act of writing the words on the paper slows your thinking down. So the minuscule gaps that appear between your normal rushed thinking are suddenly stretched out. And what comes out of reflecting on yourself and on reflecting on the actions in the world that's out there are a series of opportunities. And I've become addicted to it. I think I mentioned a wee while ago in my vlog, I've written over 2,000 pages in just over 2 years. It's a huge amount of writing. And it now, you know, and I'm not ashamed to say it anymore, I now deem my journal as probably my best friend after my wife and my children. That book, that go-to comfort of certain pen, one of these, you know, a Lichtrum book is probably closest I have to a confidant. It's funny, somebody said to me, do you treat it a bit like a dog because it doesn't talk back? I was like, you know what, it's a great analogy, it's like a dog. You talk
in the
low manner and they never talk back to you, they just soak it all up. And laterally I found myself, because there's a little bit of gratitude crept in, it didn't start there, but the gratitude portion sort of crept in when I started thanking the journal for actually listening to me. And yeah, it's. I don't know if that answers the question, but it's something that has absolutely transformed how I think about every aspect of my life in individual components. But most importantly, it's actually pulled them all back together into some form of congruent, systematic thinking that doesn't feel rushed, it doesn't feel jumbled up, it doesn't feel uncertain. It feels considered and emotionally intelligent, which if I was to describe how I would like to be seen in the world or how I might like to show up in the world, I think in a business sense, I'd like to show up like that to make sure that I'm comfortable about adding the best value that I can to the people that I serve. Yeah.
For the time that we've got, I'll say three, but I'm sure there's many others that you would probably tell yourself. From 2004. Mm-hmm. What three things, what three pieces of advice would you give Richard Tinto in 2004?
Don't surround yourself with bad people. Always be confident, always trust your gut around who you should be working with and who you shouldn't. And if you can be resolute to that, do it. And try to take a step back at all times and really think about the relationships that you're going to form, because they can be the best thing in the world and they can be the most frustrating thing in the world. You never do anything other than learn from a bad relationship, but it just wastes time. And that's the bit that I feel frustrated about, is bad decisions that I made around people that I associated with have wasted my time. And that's a bad thing. I think the lesson is it taught me a huge amount about how to behave and how not to behave, but they just wasted my time. Life is short, you know, Seneca, we are not here for a long time. So that frustration, so that's the first one. The second one is around being yourself, and that vulnerability that I've started to talk about in my vlogging and things. I think people will like you or not like you regardless. It doesn't matter how polished or how perfect you are, you will be judged by others in the same way that you judge others. Therefore, to be anything other than your authentic self is a bit of a false play, because you'll be judged anyway. And that's been a hard one. That's been a latter one. That's probably been the most recent big learning that I've had in that. And the middle one, I suppose, is a bit more business focused, is that don't ever feel that, and again, it's related to people, but don't ever feel you have to meet expectations of a market. Simon, you know that I'm quite radical in my approach to how we do things, a combination of, you know, technology, environment, and process. And I think what I've proven to myself over the last 17 or 18 years is that actually, some of the ideas and some of the thinking that I had as a really young guy are actually really strong. And just because someone said it couldn't be done a certain way, I may have made many mistakes. I may have taken a long time to get there, but I'm proving to myself now that some of that thinking was really, really strong. And those ideas are carrying through now. So trusting yourself, I suppose, is there. Choose your relationship really wisely. Trust yourself. And be yourself.
Do you care what people say now?
Less so, but as you know, and I vlogged at the weekend, it only takes one flash through social media to see a manifestation of someone else in a different form to shake your confidence. Do I care? I care that I leave something more than I went into the world with. So I care about that. Do I care what other people think? Decreasingly so, because what I find is that as I become more honest with myself and as I become better at what I do and more experienced at what I do, people migrate towards that in a manner that is actually where I'd like to spend more of my time. There was a Harvard Business Review article very recently about reducing your circle of influence. You know, we all like to have these social pools of friends upon friends upon friends, but what you do is you dilute the quality of relationship. So if you can, and well published and well written about, you are the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with. Pick those five people really wisely and spend a lot of time with them and allow that to be your compass.
Why did you go into the industry that you went into? What is it you love about architecture and interiors?
I probably had this conversation with you over a pint as well, but as a little boy, probably my dad said, you know, you want to be a lawyer, an accountant, or an architect. Well, I didn't realize that lawyers and accountants got paid a lot more, but I liked the fact that architecture sounded pretty cool. So I was one of these guys that kind of always held in my mind what my father said, be a lawyer, be an accountant, be an architect. And when it got to being a younger man without much, I've got a very difficult relationship with my dad, as you know. And I think part of it is that he wasn't what I would hope to be in terms of setting me on the right path. You know, I hope to send my troops on the right path. And I don't ever feel that I was, but a lot of what he said, I carried with me because I thought that he was effectively the man at the time. So the architect thing hung with me, and I got the opportunity to leave school, do a modern apprenticeship in the subject. And I got into it, and I got into it because I thought it was cool. But what I realized very quickly was that through architecture and through design and through the physical manifestation of space, you can make the world, you can transform experiences for people, whether that's in a residential setting, whether that's in a leisure setting, or whether that's in a work setting. You can change how people feel about the world through what you create. And I just, our why now at Tintcase, I think that's a pretty cool purpose. And, you know, I didn't really know it when I entered into it, but I worked it out pretty quickly, and it stuck with me for the last 20 odd years, 25 years I've been doing this, 18 for myself.
It time flies. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. And as you said a few moments ago, that when you spend time on the things that weren't developing you in the right way with people that were not providing you the outcome that you wanted, and the experience that you wanted, it's time that you're never going to get back. But it is, unfortunately, we have to abide by those lessons, and we move forward. Who is your biggest mentor internationally? I know you've been dealing with Dan Sullivan, and you do a lot of reading. And who is your closest physical mentor, if you're willing to describe?
Yes, I work with a guy called Steve Nicol. Steve's got a coaching company called Good Stuff Coaching. Steve is coached by a guy called Steve Chandler, who is a very widely published author. And the reason that my coach can work with Steve Chandler is that my coach himself was a very, very successful businessman and exited various businesses. And I've said this to Steve, and I say this to other people. I feel quite strongly that there are a lot of coaches out there that are learned to be coaches and can offer up good advice. But those coaches that have been there, done that, and got the t-shirt are really worth their weight in the world. And I think that is really important for me. So Steve's my coach. I'm part of Strategic Coach. And Again, I take it back. I think it's Napoleon Hill or whatever writes about, you know, the imaginary board, you know, that you have, and all these famous people that if you imagine yourself sitting at a table with various famous people, what would they do? So to move that on a little, if you don't mind, that there are certain guys that that I suppose I would look to as providing inspiration in different spaces. And, you know, there are those, you know, heroes that we all, and they're all well-known names. You know, you look at the integrity of someone like Nelson Mandela, you look at the innovation of guys like Steve Jobs, you look at, you know, the kind of equality that Obama brought to the world. You see some of the more prominent kind of female leads as well, you know, Sheryl Sandberg and what she's done for culture within organizations. So as I begin to lead, I look to kind of these people as well as being influencers. And Robin Sharma, so he's a guy, don't know if you're aware of Robin, but Robin wrote the 5 a.m. Club. Yeah, and Robin always says that, you know, you can spend time with any of these people by picking up a biography or an autobiography, and it's so true. I mean, Elon Musk is one that I've read recently. I mean, the guy just blows your socks off. Love him or loathe him, it's not about him, it's about what he's achieved and the methodology to achieving that. So there are people in your life that you can interact with in a tangible and a real level, but you can actually spend your time with anyone the hell you choose by picking up their book and by enjoying it. And I would encourage everyone to do that. And I used to kind of get lost in leadership books, but I try and temper that with having an autobiography beside my bed or a biography beside my bed, and by having a leadership book in the morning. So I think you know about my morning routine. So it's meditation, yoga, and journaling. And then what's left over is a business book. So I do my business reading in the morning, and do my autobiography stuff at night. And yeah, it kind of works, which is, I don't watch much telly anymore. But yeah, it kind of works, mate. So yeah.
Have you been doing a lot of work from home yourself, or have you tried to stay in the office where possible?
I've taken an approach with the business of absolute blended working. So when we were all forced home to work last year, I spent, I think it was the 18th of March until the middle of August at home, as everyone did. Then as restrictions in the UK eased, we started to come back, and I had invested a stack of cash in new IT just before lockdown came. So we scrapped all that. We reinvested in a stack of laptops and stuff. And what we said very early on is that we were actually at the point of signing an extension to a lease and a bit of space next door to the office here because we needed more space. But what I realized was that we'll never need all the space that we think we need. And I hope this segues nicely on to what I think about the office. But what we said is that we will now adopt a full-on blended strategy to working, where the non-negotiable for my team is to be in and around the office on a Monday morning to catch the buzz, as I like to call it. And then thereafter, it's discretionary. Client proposal meetings, we really like to do in our office. We like a client to trust us enough to come in and see how we roll at Tinto. But thereafter, I firmly believe that the best focused pieces of work can be done wherever you're comfortable, whether that is in your home, whether it's in a co-work space, whether it's in a coffee shop, whether it's in outside. I genuinely believe that our best work should not be confined to the office. But in the same hand, some of the best thinking can only come from the office or the workspace. Because
those moments of inspiration and those moments of team building, team bonding, brainstorming, you work as a team rather than individuals. The best ideas come from more heads than one.
Yeah, and that's I know, you know, in a workspace sense, where I think the biggest opportunity sits, Simon, the workspaces and offices conventionally can evolve to become these physical manifestations of brand that are just the most wonderful opportunity to attract and retain the best people. But but equally inspire your clients as well. What better way to inspire a client by using your workspace to walk your talk? And if you can do that, then you can forge a stronger and more trusting and hopefully longer term relationship with them, where the value far outplays any cost conversation that may occur.
Mm. I did some due diligence on obviously some of your recent work, and was very, very excited and pleased by your Petrofac project. Mm-hmm. It just looks like it would have been really fun to do. It was very Google-esque, if I may say. Lots of bright colors, lots of innovation spaces, lots of brainstorming. And we're talking about an engineering firm. How have you found that change in the offices since we first met, when we were working with people like Baker Hughes, Mott MacDonald, and it was an office of tradition where you were plying 50 to 100 to 250 desks? Now, desks seem to be obsolete. They're not completely gone, but now it's a case of focus rooms. Now it's open plan. Now it's collaboration spaces, and even meeting rooms are becoming more informal.
Absolutely. Your camera's frozen, mate. I don't know if you can drop this bit out, but I don't know if that's a thing or not, but we can carry on.
Yeah, we'll carry on. Yeah. Cool. As long as the audio is there.
You can chop that observation out. What I think's driven it, Simon, is the search for talent, and as the working environment has, or as the demand for the best talent, you know, the knowledge economy, you know, when we moved out of the Industrial Revolution, you know, we transferred from a predominantly manual economy to a knowledge-based economy. So to do what we did in conventional workspaces, the office evolved from a transfer from effectively factory floor to office floor without any due consideration to what the benefits of that may or may not be. And I think that has accelerated again, probably over the last 25 years, exponentially. So for as long as I've been in the business, it has expanded and extended. And I would say now that the convergence of knowledge-based working, the requirement to attract and retain the very best talent, but also technology, has meant that the office exists to serve a completely different purpose, even from that which it did probably, I would say probably before 2007, before the arrival of the iPhone and the revolution on technology that we're seeing now.
Mm. We discussed a recent project that we did for a global consultant. Mm-hmm. Over the pandemic, and a lot of the stakeholders were based in Europe and in Dubai.
Yeah.
Therefore, there was no local presence, there was no physical presence, and we had to turn to remote management, remote project collaboration. You mentioned earlier that you're looking at doing, or you are based around the UK. You can only physically, certainly now, you can only physically be in so many places at any one time. And you've also got quite a decent presence with some oil and gas clients internationally. Mm-hmm. How do you think that the technology evolution is going to help you to expand to a wider audience in different countries? Surely it's a positive for the smaller companies.
Hugely positive. So I'll probably go off on one here, and I apologize in advance, but we had a bit of
no need. Crack on.
The pandemic experience in it. We delivering a bit of work with an oil and gas major, or a couple of oil and gas majors in the Southern Atlantic and the Falkland Islands. So bearing in mind we could only get to the islands, which are 8,500 miles from the UK, a couple of times a year. We had design team. I actually worked, funnily enough, with Mott MacDonald's Aberdeen office on the engineering. We delivered the architecture. But the cost consultants were Mott's office in London. The producer client or the operator client was based in London. The service company client was based in Houston, and the contractor was based near Chicago. So that pre-pandemic proved to us that through the technology that's become every day in the pandemic, that we could talk and we could meet and we could liaise as teams in that sense. But the biggest thing, again, pre-pandemic, which again, I think has probably accelerated through the course of the last year, is the deployment of BIM, building information modeling. And from a design perspective, it's working as lead designers, which architects will generally do, and having a live model that all of your sub-consultants feed into. And even more recently, having the ability for the surveyors to provide cost modeling to those models as they emerge. Now, that's really important because I believe that for the first time in 250 years, we may see the potential cost of construction come down. Construction has been subject to inflation for as long as inflation has been a thing. Construction as an industry has also suffered from lagging behind other innovations in terms of how we deliver our service. So what happens now with the emergence of BIM is that we can conceptualize a design that can be verified structurally, service-wise, and cost-wise almost instantaneously. But even more importantly, it can be passed to a contractor in a far less risky fashion. So preliminary costs, contingency costs, health and safety costs, material costs can all be modeled to a point now that has been impossible since the emergence of electronic drawing, since the emergence of abilities to cross-communicate on platforms like this, the ability to share information. So having touched on it before the pandemic, what the last year has really proven to me more than ever is that the urgency to develop these capabilities is never been more important. The race is now on, and the great news about being in construction and about being in the kind of workspace and fit out sector is that because the industry sits so far behind other industries in terms of how we've innovated, and you look at the car manufacturer, touched on Elon Musk earlier, if you think about how they build a car and compare that narrative, how they build a building, you know, the clean, whitewashed factory, robotics, components, diligence, etc. Conceivably, in Richard Tinto's world, we can be at some point in the future building buildings like that, not specifically offsite. But what the technology is proving is that through modeling, through design, we can determine what is best left to on-site construction, so traditional construction. What is best left to off-site construction, so what can be built off-site and brought to site, modular prefabrication. But most excitingly is if we are building data-driven models of our buildings, they can almost be slotted into the back of a robot, and that conventional labor can be replaced with labor that doesn't have any accidents, labor that doesn't take too many breaks, labor that potentially doesn't draw the cost out of control and does what it's told based on a very, very robust and safe model. So it's idealistic, it's utopian in my view, but I think that we have an opportunity, given where we are in our careers, I include you in this as well, Mr. Joss, to capitalize on the next 10 years. Technology is converging really nicely. Government policy globally is converging really nicely. Understanding fellow humans is converging really nicely. What a wonderful opportunity it is to try and move our industry forward through clever deployment of these things, and you know, really transform the world through the buildings that we leave behind. Because going back to that personal bit, I will leave a legacy through my children, but Tinto will leave their legacy through buildings that last way after I'm gone. And that's pretty cool too.
Absolutely. Hold that thought there for just 1 second. Okay, now that we've got our internet issues sorted. I agree with what you're saying, but I've got a couple of challenges for you, right? So if you're looking at BIM, how long has BIM been rolled out from day one? When did it become live?
BIM? I mean, building information modeling has been around for 20 years. it's become particularly relevant in the UK and on the global projects that we've worked on, probably in the last 3 to 5 years, as generationally, new talent has entered the industry knowing little else to that end. So I would say 5 years, it's been around for 20, it's been talked about for 15, and probably in the last five, it has become a viable solution to delivering, better value buildings.
I would agree with that. And I've had various conversations. One particular gentleman I spoke to, probably just pre-pandemic actually, was a lovely Australian chap who is with the Hamad Medical Corporation, a gentleman called Ryan Theodore. And when we spoke about project collaboration, data management, construction data clouds, as-built information, documentation, the conversation that we had around assets was that, well, you're talking about BIM. 100% I'm not talking about BIM, because there are a lot of existing buildings pre 2015, let's say, 6 years ago, that had no BIM records or models at all available. And that information is still lacking, certainly in this part of the world. Yeah. And I'm sure there's information that is just non-existent in the Western world as well. And in fact, I know that for a fact. There are organizations across the world that have offices in multiple tens of locations. The consultant that we actually spoke about earlier, that we did the project with remote management, we spoke to their US office and they had no centralized data of their offices. Yeah. They're in over 50 countries. They don't know the specifications. They don't have the as-built. It's all on a cloud, but there's absolutely no interaction. There's no collaboration or sharing between their offices. So while I agree that if, and this is what Ryan was mentioning, if you utilize BIM as it is designed, don't dip your toe in the water with BIM, because it's a complete waste of how it was actually supposed to be utilized. But from day one, if you can create that model, and I know nothing about BIM, so I'm generalizing here, forgive me if I'm off track. You create that model, you create those structural calculations, the architectural, the MEP, the coordination is there, the materials, the cost, and everything that's required for all of those consultants and sub-consultants and designers to be able to collaborate so that there is no clashes within MEP. Everything is coordinated and you can see exactly what's going on, discipline to discipline. 100% agree, especially if you're building a Burj Khalifa, especially if you're building a Gherkin in London, especially if you're building a Doha Tower in Qatar. This is 100% correct. But what do we do about the buildings that don't have that information? And what do we do about the people that are, I remember looking at some statistics that were done by, well, a couple of sets of statistics by Autodesk and also by McKinsey and Company, ironically, one of the consultants we've worked with, in which they've said that there is less than 26% of main contractors actually in the UK utilizing BIM. So it's not even a majority rule. It's not even a majority of people that are implementing this particular software. It's only so many people that are actually taking advantage of it. And how many of that 26% are utilizing it to the full potential? My challenge to you is BIM too complex for the, for the average Joe to be able to take on? Is it only for the Lang O'Rourkes of the world?
So I will quote Mandela again, it's impossible it's impossible until it's done. And what we need to remember, so on your existing building, so the retrofit market is huge, and the retrofit market is one of the most sustainable ways to develop because of the footprint that it lays down, the pre-existing footprint. So I'm a huge fan of retrofitting. So retrofit has got massive potential. The data capture is essential to BIM. So if you imagine a couple of floors of a tower in Qatar, it's been a while since I've been over, Simon, but I guess, some of the projects that we looked at, when I was over, fitting two or three floors for an international company coming in, how we collect data now would be via a point cloud. So we would survey, by LiDAR, these spaces, and we would build a BIM model for that portion of the building, and we would isolate the performance of that to be better than, but also equal to and interlinked with the performance of the building, in the hope that gradually over time, if we are building legacy buildings like the Gherkin, like the Qatar Tower, that these buildings are around for 50, 75 or 100 years. So over the first portion of their life, over the first series of leases of their life, they are modeled to. Someone has to do it. And if it isn't going to be us, then some young punk is going to come up behind me and do it for me. So my challenge is to push that and to show the value to someone that says, we are in an asset that is 15 years old and we want to refurb 8 stories of it. Can you show me how BIM would deliver that with more value than a conventional sense? I would put my hand up and I would say that we are now seeing developing evidence that suggests that it will beat it hands down to the tune of possibly 15 to 20% cost saving. But more importantly is we can reduce risk and we can improve safety and we can improve the environment by deploying the technology in the right manner to achieve these things. So.
Yeah, and the obvious ones of cost and time efficiency within the project, because there is, you're minimizing rework. And that's a large, again, with these statistics that we've been reading. Rework is phenomenal.
The three C's, collaborative working increases creativity. So the collaboration that happens through these platforms increases creativity because many, many minds make light of it. It enhances clarity. And it delivers certainty, you know, creativity, clarity, and certainty is what BIM in my work, in my mind stands for. And that is the opportunity there, that the risk profile that surrounds construction in general, the horrible preliminary cost, the terrible contingencies, the astonishingly bad health and safety record, and the carbon footprint can all in part be eaten into through clever design. And that's the opportunity for me, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. What does 2021 hold for Richard Tinto and Tinto Group? What's coming up on the horizon?
So for all of the ability to work remotely, I'm really looking forward to jumping on an aeroplane and
getting into some sunshine around that window.
I love if they were powered by hydrogen. And I know it's being worked on or biofuel, etc. But what it holds, so we've got some really nice business around the UK, everything from high-end residential, one-off housing to multiple housing projects, refit projects, new builds, residential projects. Office refit's going to be a really interesting one because I think as we emerge, that profile of the office will change. And I think that as people require to spend less time there, then how they use that space will transfer in the way that we've described. And on the retail leisure part, it's really interesting because how we socialize is changed forever too. So that's a watching brief on how the explosion of going out and socializing, once that settles down, it's how we want to do it and how we want to spend our time. Will be an interesting one. And from a Tinto perspective, you know, I think we've got a bigger headcount coming out of the pandemic than we had going into it. Turnover is where it was. Profitability, we've invested a lot. We've developed a couple of, we're in the process of trying to develop a couple of pieces of technology that help us on our journey, one of which will enhance collaboration. It's a sort of portal that enhances our BIM capability, and the other is a wee bit of tech that we're hoping can solve the building regulations. More about that later, but the idea is just to keep doing what we're doing with a renewed confidence. And if the last year taught us that the pace of change can accelerate tenfold in a single year, my view is that the opportunities have increased tenfold through the very same year. And if we throw our arms around it, then we can achieve some pretty spectacular things.
That's exciting. Do I need to reserve your one of the kids' bedrooms for November 2022? Because the family's not sticking around for the World Cup, so I've already got my waiting list of guests.
You don't mind, and I suppose by return I could offer up one of my bedrooms for your wife and kids in the UK. It's only be fair and just thing to do, mate.
Absolutely. It's called a bar.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we were hoping to get to Wembley for Scotland, England in June, but it looks like tickets are going to be at a bit of a premium for that. So, I think it would be really great to come over when the World Cup arrives in autumn next year. And it's just a wonderful spectacle for the Middle East. I think it's a bit of a Rubicon in terms of, you know, what the Middle East serves to be. And I'm really excited to kind of get across and suck it up a wee bit.
Hopefully we'll get you across before that. You can do a bit of a recce before that, and interesting to carry on our conversations offline. But I think we've run out of time, and I think it's 45 minutes that's absolutely flown by. And really enjoyed your insight, both personally into your development over the past 18 years in business, and also what's moving forward in 21 and 22. And I'm sure we will touch base again with you to see how the year has been going. But for the time being, Richard Tinto, thank you very much for your time. This has been Space Design and Build. Hang on the line. We'll have a quick chat afterwards. But thank you very much.